You're listening to Beyond Bourbon Street, an insider's guide to New Orleans. Beyond Bourbon Street is the podcast where we explore the food, music, culture, places, and people that make New Orleans unique. Whether you are planning a trip, living in New Orleans, or simply wanting a taste of the Crescent City from wherever you are, you've come to the right place. And now, your host, Mark Bologna.
Hey y'all, this is Mark. Welcome to episode 15 of the podcast. I hope you enjoyed the last show where I interviewed the accidental Cajun, Chef James Cullen. If you haven't heard it yet, go back and give it a listen. It was a lot of fun learning about James, but also getting his thoughts on New Orleans as someone who didn't grow up here. That episode is chock full of ideas about things to do and places to eat, so it'd be a great listen if you were headed to New Orleans for a visit. Before we jump into today's show, I want to say thanks to those who left me a review on iTunes. We're up to 74 reviews now, including Strengths Mama, Patty V119, FGL New York City, Melly Mom, and Amanda AA, who writes, "I first got turned on to Beyond Bourbon because I was searching for a little more history of New Orleans. I'm a recent graduate and am finally moving to New Orleans from Texas. This podcast has helped me stay motivated and get excited to finally get to the city and explore. Mark's podcast has been great to listen to for anyone who plans to visit or move to the city." Thanks, Amanda. I can't wait to meet you once you get settled here. And thanks to everyone who takes a moment to leave me a review on iTunes. It's the easiest way you can help me grow the audience, and it's also an opportunity for me to hear about what you like about the show so I can be sure to keep doing it. Now, on to today's episode. Tales of the Cocktail is coming up in a couple of weeks, and I wanted to do something that touched on that event but would serve as a resource for anybody visiting New Orleans who might enjoy a good drink. I think I've found the solution. An interview with a New Orleanian who also happens to be an award-winning bartender. Keep listening for an entertaining and informative walk through the cocktail landscape of New Orleans. Welcome, everybody. This is Mark. My guest today is a New Orleanian by choice. She's an experienced actor, a teacher, a singer, and a bar chef. In fact, she was recently recognized as the Bartender of the Year. She makes her home behind the bar at Compare Le Pen. Welcome to the show, Abigail Gullo.
Hi, Mark. Thank you for having me.
How are you today?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. Enjoying this beautifully hot day, but enjoying some nice cool air conditioning and cool drinks to go with it.
No doubt. Thanks for being with us. I want to talk about a couple of things today as we were talking about off air. I want to talk about cocktails, of course, and a little bit maybe of the history of the cocktail in New Orleans, where to enjoy a great drink. I want to touch on Tales of the Cocktail for people that will be coming in. But first, I want to start with your story a little bit, if that's all right.
Sure.
So, where are you from?
I was a bit of a nomadic child. My parents moved around a lot when I was a kid. I was born in Buffalo, but I learned how to talk in Atlanta, Georgia. We moved back to New York near my mom's family in New York City and lived around New York City for a couple years and then down to Virginia, where I went to college. And then I moved back to New York City, and then I guess in a way of rebelling from my folks, I stayed in one apartment for 17 years.
Wow.
I took breaks during that time, and I went back to D.C. for a job for a year, and I lived in Dublin, Ireland for 2 years as well, because I have a real love for all things Irish, and really enjoyed my time there, too. But I was a New Yorker, definitely in my heart and in my soul until I was seduced away by New Orleans.
So that's great. Tell me about that story, how you were seduced away from New York to New Orleans.
I had been coming to New Orleans since I was a kid. My dad was a reporter, and we covered the Republican National Convention in 1988. My parents were experimenting with letting me kind of just have free reign of things, and so I was a very independent young teenager. Met a girl on the plane, and we went out for hurricanes at the old Hard Rock Cafe.
Nice.
Down by the river, and went to a couple daiquiri shops, and just remember thinking at the time, man, if this town is this much fun when it's full of Republicans, I have to come back. So I came back a few times as a young woman and in college, being in Virginia, not too far away. But I really started seriously coming back for the culture of cocktails and hospitality when I discovered Tales of the Cocktail about almost 10 years ago now.
Okay, so and that started in the early 2000s?
It did. Started in the early 2000s. And by the time I got involved, it was really kind of like bartender spring break. It was where bartenders from all over the world came as a community to share their ideas, to share their experiences, to meet people, to meet other like-minded people. Because back then, and even today, there's a few, the numbers who do with the kind of work that we do are few.
Yeah. And so what is, so we'll jump to that for a minute, Tales of the Cocktail. So what's that going to be like for you this year, sort of hosting, not that you've done it before, but sort of hosting?
Well, I have loved Tales before I moved here. After I moved here, it kind of just became a lot of work. I don't get to have as much fun as I used to, but it always kind of falls on my birthday, and I kind of feel like 25,000 of my closest friends come to New Orleans to celebrate my birthday.
Nice.
So I still really enjoy the camaraderie of my friends coming. I enjoy hosting them now. I have this beautiful restaurant where they can come visit me and I can make them drinks and can share ideas with them and can share some hospitality with them. So it's wonderful. It's wonderful. You'll find me mostly during Tales behind the bar here at Compare Levin, greeting my friends, and I'll be coming around the bar for lots of hugs and kisses.
So that sounds a little bit like the difference between traveling in to enjoy Mardi Gras as opposed to hosting people for Mardi Gras.
Exactly. Yes, it's very similar, actually.
So you mentioned Compare Levin, and that's a good segue of, as I read about you and what I know about you, you're often referred to as bar chef, which I think is a really, has a lot of meaning. What does that mean to you, and how does it fit in here, Compare Levin?
Well, a bartender to me encompasses so much. It's about hospitality. It's about taking care of somebody. It's about serving good drinks. Mixologist was always about people who really cared about the craft and the history of the craft. The term mixology actually comes from the 1860s, from the first kind of golden era of mixology and craft cocktails. So when people started calling themselves mixologists, they were harking back to that kind of first golden era.
Okay.
There was a lot of history involved with that as well. Bar chef, kind of the way I see it is now, I've always worked at a bar that's also a restaurant, and also a very fine restaurant as well. All of my bars that I've worked at have had amazing kitchens with amazing chefs. And for me, I'm kind of really bringing together that idea of great cocktails and great food together in one place, which makes it a real kind of spot for the community. We also have great coffee here. So we cover, like, from 7 a.m. to close. Compare Levin is like a hotbed of activity. And not just for, we happen to be in the old 77 Hotel, but we're part of a vibrant, beautiful neighborhood as well. So we have wonderful locals that come into us, too. And all the other people who work in the area, because this is also an area where a lot of people come into work. So this has become that third place, that kind of community where people can gather at lunch or gather for breakfast or gather after work for a drink or come out for a special occasion and have a dinner. So I really love that. What I like about that title, Bar Chef, is that it kind of encompasses also, like, I'm guiding you through cocktails and drink, but I'm also guiding you through your dining experience.
Mm. And, you know, we're sitting in Compare Levin right now, enjoying a couple of drinks, and it does have that feel. It feels like you know, with the exposed brick and the sunlight and obviously the restaurant wrapping around the bar being central, it just has that kind of feel like you could stumble down here after a long night and enjoy a lazy cup of coffee with a friend, and you could progress through the whole day here.
Absolutely.
Which
absolutely
wouldn't be a bad
that
way
would
to spend
not be a bad the, thing at all.
the day. The other thing that strikes me about the idea of bar chef is that it seems encompassed. You bring a lot of different things, as I mentioned in the intro. You know, your background, not only moving around, but we were talking about offline, your experience with kids, your experience as an actress, a singer. It feels like that sort of comes full circle for you. Is that fair, Leah?
Absolutely. My friend Kimberly Pattenbragg, who's another New York to New Orleans bartending transplant, she had the best line that I always loved. She said, "I have finally found my nightly stage as a bartender." And I so agree with that. Like, one of the frustrations of being a performer is that you're kind of, you know, you're beholden to whenever you can get work. Okay. And then you're beholden to a director or a certain style. And there's very few people who can just kind of get that creative artistry out whenever they feel like it. And I feel like as a bartender, I get to exercise that part of me every night. You know, I get to entertain. I get to react with people and interact with people. I get to perform for people. And going back to like children, I get to take care of people. I get to like serve their needs and make them feel better, which is, you know, was always my favorite part of working with children as well. And don't forget the education part as well. There's still a lot of education to be done when it comes to like cocktails, and I'm very happy to like have people come in, especially in such a wonderful historic city like New Orleans. People come here as cocktail tourists. They come here because they know the cocktail was invented here, and they know that, well, if it wasn't invented here, it's been at least perfected here and maintained here beautifully, unlike any place in the country. So they come for that education and for that experience, and I'm very happy to provide that for them.
So let's unpack that for a minute, if we could. You hit a couple things. One, sort of the tourist, right? The the cocktail tourist. Everyone who, someone's coming in is very much an aficionado or an enthusiast, maybe coming in for Tales of the Cocktail. And then on the other end of the spectrum, you might have, well, like me, right? Somebody who's, I grew up here, I love the music, love the food, but I don't know a whole lot about cocktails. How do you deal with that? How do you approach, help someone approach that wanders in and say, hey, I've heard these great things about Compare Le Pain, but I don't know anything about what to drink or even where to get started?
Well, like a lot of education, and like someone told me once that 90% of acting is reacting, a lot of what I'm going to be doing is reacting to your needs, and I'm going to adjust to that. And I was a Montessori school teacher, and that style of teaching is very much follow the child, and it kind of appreciates that there are multiple ways of learning about things, so the important thing is to be able to recognize that in your child and then help feed that the best way you can. So I take the same philosophy to my approach with customers. You know, I ask them questions and ask them what they're looking for. A lot of people come in and ask me what my favorite cocktail is, and I'm like, well, that's irrelevant, because it's what your favorite cocktail is that I'm going to enjoy serving you the best. So let's find out what you're going to enjoy the most. So I ask a lot of questions to my guests to make sure that I'm giving them exactly what they want, because in the end, that's what I'm here for. I'm here to make my guests happy. And some people can't always express what they need or what they want. So I ask some questions until they tell me, and then I'm able to infer that from their responses.
So you're not only a bar chef, you're a bar educator.
A little bit of a bar educator as well, yeah.
It also strikes me, your background, that it's so much of improv, what you're describing.
It's so funny because I hated improv. Oh, when I was coming up as a young woman in New York City in the 90s, it was all improv. It was all Upright Citizens Brigade, and it was all these fans, and I hated all of it. I didn't want to do any of it. Now it's what I do every day.
It's funny how that happens sometimes. So what is, you mentioned in passing the history of the cocktail in New Orleans, and perhaps it was, you know, perhaps it was created here. If not, it was certainly an early adopter. How do you deal with sort of a, how do you blend the history and the traditions in New Orleans with things like the Sazerac, with the craft of developing new things and being inventive? And how does that work?
Well, New Orleans was, and to some people they still think, it's the most important city in America. I mean, there's so much for when its location, this port, access to South America, to the Caribbean. So many immigrants came through this port. More Sicilians came through the port of New Orleans than New York. You know, there's, and then the access to all of the rest of America through the Mississippi coming the other way as well. All of these things are so important, not to mention the influx of the Caribbean culture that we had after the Haitian Revolution. So you've got so many different types of people coming together. This was the first true American melting pot. And I mean, just by the fact that we had three distinct different types of French people here is saying so much about how many different people had to get along here. And I really think that we are still a very inventive, creative society. I mean, this is where now artists come to express and ply their crafts. It's where Andrew Higgins came and invented the Andrew Higgins boat that led to us winning World War II, basically, because of the D-Day invasion. So many great inventions came out of here. And when it comes to cocktails, that really all based in our pharmacies and our bitters. And luckily, because we are a history that really values preservation, even if it is sometimes preservation through neglect. We have a pharmacy museum. Mm-hmm. You can still go inside the shop where Peychaud had his pharmacy. And they'll even, if you ask nicely, pull out this old bottle of Peychaud's that they have hidden, even though it's an antique store now. They definitely love flying to cocktail tourists. So I really... I think it's, I mean, it's an easy sell. This is, and it's still a place where people come to get creative and have ideas. We are a big place for conferences. Mm-hmm. So people come from all over the world and bring your business here to stimulate creativity, to stimulate networking, to stimulate that kind of, that growth as a business. So in a way that I think no other city has, because we have so much culture surrounded by so many hotel rooms and so many people who love to take care of all these people. Mm-hmm. That's why I think the Super Bowl, honestly, should be held here every year.
I agree.
I mean, there's really no other city that can do what we do.
And where we're sitting, right, we're in the perfect spot for it. So we're in the, right on the edge of the Central Business District and the Warehouse District, the Arts District, all kind of combined. Mm-hmm. And we're between the river and the Superdome.
Yes.
So for the convention year, right, it's perfect wandering back and forth.
Absolutely.
And you mentioned as well, right in here, there are a lot of, the service industry is very strong here. Lots of restaurants, lots mm-hmm. of bars, lots of cross-pollination, if you will. I would imagine you guys get a lot of people that are getting off a shift or that
sort I always of love that this is a 24-hour town in a way that is so service industry. It's like a wheel of service industry people constantly working. Because I have sometimes people come in and they get upset with me when I'm like, okay, it's last call. And they're like, but it's like midnight. I thought this was New Orleans. I'm like, yeah. And there's still 500 other bars out there that are open. I'm going to be going to one. You should come with me. You know, it's I get off and I go to the next group. And when they get off, they go to the next group. And then it's the whole cycle starts again. I mean, this is a 24-hour cycle of service industry people that keep this bar going. And without us fellow service industry people frequenting some of these places, they wouldn't be there.
Fair enough.
So
fair
we
enough.
Really are like, we help propel all of each other up. That's why this is such a wonderful community of bartenders and service people. We're very close. We take care of each other in a way that, you know, there's... you know, in a way that like unions used to take care of people,
sure.
We've kind of just developed our own organizations like the Barman's Fund and the USBG to do charitable work to help support each other, you know, and Facebook is a wonderful, Facebook is kind of like our LinkedIn for bartenders. Like I have bartenders all over the world asking me questions and they found me through Facebook. And now whenever someone's traveling, they'll just put it on Facebook. Hey, I'm going to Sweden. Where should I go? And they get immediately a whole list of responses of where to go and people who will take care of them. I mean, that's how I found my first apartment here. When I moved down here with like nothing and knowing nobody, a friend of a friend on Facebook said, yeah, I got a room. You can stay for my place until you have a place. I mean, that was amazing.
So instant New Orleans hospitality.
It is. It is.
So you kind of, again, mentioned this in a moment. You sort of set this up, but tell me a little bit about what's your New Orleans life like? I'm always intrigued by people who are New Orleanians by choice.
Yes. Well, I, having been pretty much a lifelong New Yorker, there are certain things that are the same. I live in a small apartment. I don't have a dishwasher. I still have to pay for laundry. So I was like, oh, well, those things are kind of the same as New York. What's different is instead of like an hour or more on a subway car, I now have like about a 10 to 15 minute bike ride commute to work.
Nice.
If it rains, I can walk. I have a pool in my backyard. And I have a wonderful little dog who accompanies me on lots of adventures all over the parks and the cities. And we've gone as, we go to Lafayette, we go to Houston, we go to Birmingham, we explore the South together and are just having a blast. So I'm, my life here, when I'm not working, I'm often visiting my friends in the industry, going out to eat, going out to drink, going to events that are within the industry. I see as much music as I can. I'm going to go see the Squirrel Nut Zippers tonight at like a bar stumbling distance from my house. That's a lot of fun. That I didn't say that about New York very often.
That's one of the things that, having grown up here, you sort of take that stuff for granted. Mm-hmm. And then when people come and move, they're sort of amazed that you can just walk out your door and experience New Orleans.
Yes. Yes. It is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And I was always kind of raised one foot in the city, one foot in the country. So the first year or so here, I felt I started to feel a little bit like, okay, I need to get out. I need to find an escape. And that's happened to be when I went to a boucherie in Lafayette and met a whole bunch of Lafayette people and was like, oh, I found my country people. Yes. Yes. People I could have a pig roast with. People I could camp out in a field in the middle of nowhere with. Yeah. Yeah. So I've always kind of had that kind of, that balance in life of one foot in the country, one foot in the city. And it was been great. There's such a wonderful group of people there. They're so fantastic. I'm French Canadian. My mother has a French Canadian named Charbonneau. And someone was asking me if I was Cajun, and I said, "Oh no." And he said, "I think you are Cajun. You're just late."
What a great comment.
I took my time getting here.
What a great comment.
Well, if somebody's coming to visit. First, actually, I want to go back to, so your first, well, tell us about, so you arrive in New Orleans, you decide, you know, you've come here for the Republican convention in 1988. I was actually there, but that's another story. So you arrive, and so tell us about your first, because it seems to me, tell us about your first job here in the city, and what drew you to that job?
I actually came down to work with the Brennan family, and I thought, wow, I loved it. How could I get more lucky? The Brennan family was opening up a new bar in the French Quarter, their first kind of this branch of the family, their first trip back to the French Quarter, and they were opening up a beverage-focused restaurant. And I couldn't believe my luck. And I went really hard for that job. It was like a year of interviews, me flying down from New York. And when I finally, I just decided to move here and was like, I'll just be here ready when you're ready to open up the restaurant. So thankfully, I had friends in the industry who gave me some jobs. Like I worked at Belloc for a while, thanks to Kirk and Neil, so I could pay rent until Sobu was ready to open. But when Sobu opened, I was just kind of thrown into that world. And I actually worked at Commander's Palace a little bit too. So that was like so important to get that part of that culture, that New Orleans culture. And I loved being in the French Quarter. I loved working in the French Quarter, and I loved making cocktails and meeting people from all over the world and creating this new bar program from scratch. It was just a very exciting time. It was really, really wonderful.
And it just seems like you've continued in that now, so that's just part of who you are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I wanted to see what life was like on the other side of Canal.
Isn't it funny? People in the French Quarter, it is its own universe.
It is. It's so great. And I live on the other side of the Quarter, so I still bike through the Quarter every day to get to and from work. So it's like it's where I stop. It's where I hang out. You know, I'm kind of a little bit of a Quarter rat. And I love it. I love the little bars and finding the people and the different places and so many different nooks and crannies to explore in the Quarter. I still love it. It's a really wonderful, wonderful place.
So the podcast is called Beyond Bourbon Street, An Insider's Guide to New Orleans. And the whole concept of it was exactly that. But there's so much beyond the little tight narrative about Bourbon Street at Mardi Gras, right? And 20-something-year-old college guys trying to get drunk and right, that whole narrative. And just in the French Quarter alone, and you hit it, it is this world. I grew up here and never get tired of just exploring it.
No.
And it's both wonderfully old and constantly changing, I think.
See, in a way, as a lifelong New York City girl, there's so many similarities. You got to understand, I grew up in a New York City that was a little bit dangerous, but it was on the up and up. It had a distinct and unique culture. And the people that lived there and supported that culture were fiercely protective of it. And we had our own way of talking and our own grocery stores. And we were so proud. And we went block by block, neighborhood by neighborhood, looking out for each other and rising up to support new people coming in from all over the world. You know, but yet still having this distinct kind of New Yorkness to us. And everything I just said about New York City growing up, you could say about New Orleans right now.
Absolutely.
I feel right at home here. People think that it was a huge change for me to move from New York City to here. They don't know the New York City I lived in because you just visited it, right?
Sure.
Or you know of it, or you know what it's like now,
right,
which is very different than the New York City of the 70s and 80s and the 90s where I grew up and I experienced it and lived it and loved it.
Sure.
You know? So I'm very proud and feel so privileged to have been as welcomed as I have in this community, because it feels like home.
That's awesome. And you've certainly made it home, and you've become part of it too, which I think is
Thank
important.
You.
So
Thank
tell
you.
Me about a little bit. So somebody comes to town, where should they go for a great drink? Besides Compare Le Pain, of course.
Well, I have a whole list. I actually do it. I divide it up by, like, themes.
Okay.
Like, we have... You could do a whole tiki tour, right? Because there's this gentleman, Ernest Beaumont Gannett. His father was from New Orleans. I think he was born in Texas. He was a rum runner for Pat O'Brien during Prohibition. But he moved out west and changed his name to Don Beach and became the godfather of the tiki movement, the modern tiki movement. And when you look at a drink like the Hurricane, it's a tiki drink,
sure.
Right? And plus our access to the Caribbean and all the sugarcane rum is just natural here. So there's like a total tiki tour you could do. And that would be Latitude 29, Tiki Tolteca, the Rum House, Cane and Table, El Libre. There are wonderful Caribbean-influenced tiki spots where you could, you know, like I heard this spoken this week, and it's so true. We are not part of the South. To get to the South, no. You have to go north. We are the northernmost spot in the Caribbean.
Absolutely, dear.
And I definitely feel that way. We don't say y'all here.
No, it's definitely
very
different.
Second of all, I would say old school New Orleans, like your old classic places. You got to go to the Sazerac and see those murals.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go to try to get a seat at the Monteleone, and you got to try to get a Vu Carré there. I mean, it was invented there. You got to get that. You got to see Marvin, amazing bartender there. You got to go to Broussard's Empire Bar. You got to meet the wonderful bartenders there. You have to meet Paul Gustings, an amazing old school bartender who makes amazing drinks and can tell amazing stories to match. You got to go to Revel and see Chris McMillan. You have to. He's my cocktail dad. Chris and Lauren McMillan told me to call them mom and dad when I moved here. I mean, they are my New Orleans mom and dad. He's like a cocktail historian. He is. Well, he started him with Dale DeGroff. He started the Museum of the American Cocktail, which again is here, which you gotta go to while you're here. It's beautiful. Those classic places evoke so much memory and class and style. The Pontchartrain Hotel now has brought that back. And it has all of that feeling to it, too, with amazing cocktails and amazing food and amazing service. Then I'd say there's this whole generation of new young bucks. You know, you've got Sylvain, you've got Angeline, Mobar, you've got Belize, Ace Hotel. I mean, these are new, young hotspots where you have amazing cocktails happening with amazing food in a really cool environment. Sobu is part of that list as well. Yeah. Absolutely. Kingfish. Kingfish kind of balances between being like old school, but also being like new young bucks.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah.
They definitely, anywhere in the French Quarter, you're going to balance that a little bit both ways.
They do that well.
And then there are the outliers. Like I have a whole list of dive bars that I go to. On the way home, definitely Boondock Saint, Cosmos, Black Penny, Bar Tonique. These are all like divey bars that also have great bartenders. Bar Tonique also has world-class cocktails. I mean, that's amazing. And then something that is like special and unique and like only in New Orleans, Bacchanal.
Mm.
Bacchanal to me represents like the magic. This started out as a little wine shop. It became a linchpin of the neighborhood. It grew with the neighborhood. It's a magical place when you go in that, take your wine and go to that backyard with twinkly fairy lights and mismatched patio chairs and have like some of the best food you've ever had. I remember when they were still serving on like paper plates. Like I've never had food so good served on paper plates.
And I like that you have to really sort of search that place out. I mean,
yeah.
You can hop in an Uber and say, take me there.
Yeah.
But there's a bit of a journey to get there.
There's a journey to get there and there's a lot of history in that one spot. Even the recent history, you know, they've only been open, 10 years?
Mm-hmm.
10 years now?
10 years.
They were pre-Katrina's before them, like a little bit earlier. They have so much history just in that one spot. Everything that they've experienced. I love it. It's when I pick people up at the airport, I usually arrive with a daiquiri. Say, welcome to New Orleans, start drinking. Because you can.
So you're fully acclimated. You got
fully
that.
Fully acclimated. And I usually take them right to Bacchanal so we can chill out, kind of absorb some of the community, listen to some live music, drink some amazing cocktails, some really good wine. They have great cocktails upstairs, too. Mm. And eat the food. The amazing food from Chef Funky.
So you just gave our listeners a fabulous tour.
Yes.
So that would be your entire time here.
That would
get off the plane, get a
You need a week, maybe two.
And when you've done that, then you can see some of the historical sites, yeah, if you want.
If you want. There's some nearby. Hey, I always tell people, go to the French 75 bar. That's on the classics list. And go upstairs to the Germain Wells Museum. Mm. That is a hidden gem that is not to be missed. Mm. Just wonderful. And I love those classics. The French 75 bar is one of the bars that I was like, this is why I want to move to New Orleans. Wow. I want to go to this bar more often. I want this to be my one of my local bars. And now it,
and is. It is.
I have fulfilled a great dream.
As it seems for you, the sort of storytelling part of being an actress, and then it just blends all naturally into your life story.
Right? It comes, you know, I was raised, both my parents were writers. My mom is also a historian and a family historian. You know, I could trace my roots back to La Rochelle in France in the 1500s. All of these people make up my story that I'm continually writing as I go through my life.
How
so
neat.
So I really feel like stories are important. It's how we share our humanity with people.
Mm. And New Orleans is so much about stories. Everyone has a story, and every place is, even the drinks, right? Everything has a story here.
Absolutely.
The food on the paper plates are talking about. Everything has a story.
Yep.
So you've touched on this a little bit, actually a lot, but for the person who's coming in for Tales of the Cocktail, what do you tell them? How do they get the most out of, whether they're an industry professional or, mm-hmm. or maybe an enthusiast?
The seminars. The seminars are, you know, maybe if you're a professional, some things might, you know, go to what interests you. Mm. You're going to always get something interesting out of it. You think you might know something about everything about a subject, but you're always going to learn something from those seminars. I think they're amazing. You know, everyone loves the parties. Everyone loves the tasting rooms. I prefer the quiet camaraderie of meeting with someone, hanging out in a corner. I still love that people walk around with bottles in their bags. And I'm like, hey, have you tried this yet? And they'll just pour each other tastes of something that they're carrying around. You know, that and they're like, oh, this is amazing. Yeah, I import this myself. I do this in my spare time when I'm not at work and raising my three children. You know, like, there's so much love and passion that goes into so much of this industry. The bartenders who are, you know, who have dreams of owning their own bar. The brand ambassadors who really have great passion for their product. And the educators, the people who write books about this, who are shaping our new cocktail culture, they're all there. So get to know them, meet them, talk to them, get a quiet corner with them, go to their seminars. Like, this is all so important. The parties are great, but man, come on, we're from New Orleans. We know how to party. We party all the time. I tell most of the people who come here for Tales, and they're like, this is amazing, I'm having so much fun, but there's so much to do. And I'm like, please come back when it's not Tales.
Mm, sure.
Because this city has so much to offer that you're not even touching. The people who only know, like, well, you know, I'm here for Tales, so I gotta go to the Alibi. I'm like, no, you don't gotta. You really don't.
Yeah, it's like, that can be the downside, right? When people come in for an event, whether it's Tales or it's Jazz Fest or it's Mardi Gras, you get so sucked into it. I got to do the things associated.
I've seen during Tales, the old Absinthe House becomes a big meeting group. Mm-hmm. And it's a crazy place to meet these people. Like I said, grab a quiet corner, meet these people, taste stuff out on the street. Old Absinthe House is kind of the place during Tales. When it's not Tales, you know, it's not that place. And I can't tell you how many times I've had young bartenders come into town and be like, well, I'm here in New Orleans, so I gotta stop by the old Absinthe House. I'm like, no, honey, you don't. They're not all there, all your friends. It's a whole bunch of yokels.
It's a different experience.
It's a really different experience, you know? If there's a football game in town, you might get people from who knows where. Come on. You're not going to be able to get a good cocktail, no.
And so we talked about Tales of the Cocktail, but for people that maybe aren't familiar with it, it's a huge event.
It is I don't know if I could say this with authority, but it's the largest cocktail event in the planet.
Right.
I mean, there's really nothing bigger. There's so much that happens, and it's such a wide variety of things. Like, there are cocktail weeks and bar shows and different things that you know, kind of focus on different aspects of the industry. There's nothing that's all-encompassing like Tales of the Cocktail.
Right. I mean, it's 15,000-18,000 people coming for the event.
Oh, yeah.
And it's coming up. We're recording this In late June. It's coming up June 19th through the 24th.
July 19th through the 24th. Yeah, right. See, right after my birthday.
Nice. So it's been a good lead up to your birthday with the Bartender of the Year.
It's been a good year. Nice. It's been a good year indeed. Yeah.
So, anything else you would want people to know about? So you're coming to New Orleans, whether it's for tales or not. What else would you want someone to know?
This is a place where when you go to a bar, you sit down as a stranger, you leave as a friend. You're always going to meet someone to talk to. I'm, as a single girl, I'm very happy that Tinder hasn't quite taken off here. Because people still just, like, go face-to-face and meet people.
Yeah.
That's still a thing. And we find something really odd about someone who's just on their phone all the time and not talking to you. We think you're weird if you don't talk to us in the middle of the street, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Right? If you say, how you doing, and someone doesn't respond, you're like, oh, what's wrong with
that
person?
What's your problem?
Yeah, what's your problem? Where are you from? What's wrong with you? No. It's like expected to converse with people. I just today, I was almost going to be late to meet you because I got into this really kind of expansive political heated argument with my landlord, who, by the way, philosophically, totally, actually, we have more in common than you'd think, but there are certain things that we're just really not ever going to get together on. But we left that conversation laughing and hugging each other. And, you know, it's like, this is the conversation America needs to have with each other. Like, we have those conversations here that mm-hmm. other people don't. We're not afraid to kind of... Someone once told me, to live in New York City, you have to be successful. To live in Los Angeles, you have to be beautiful. To live in New Orleans, you just have to be yourself. Mm. And not only living here, but when you come to visit here, you should be yourself. And you should open yourself up and learn what other people are like when they're being themselves as well. Because you will see humanity in a whole new light.
That's true. That's you just perfectly described the days when New Orleans is absolutely sublime.
Yeah.
Right? When you just accept and enjoy and open up to other people and mm-hmm. hear it. So one last question for you. Two things, actually. So if people want to find you online, I should have done this, they can follow you on Twitter at NYCBaby. Mm-hmm. Is that right? And Instagram is your full name?
Abigail Gullo, yeah.
And you have a great blog at, if I got it right, ryegirlnyc.blogspot.com.
Yes, it's a blog I started about 12 years ago, and I've not been, like, it was really just a place to write down recipes because I was making drinks too delicious, and then I'd forget them. So I started this blog to kind of document my experimentation in the kitchen because I was dating a chef at the time. I was just a school teacher. And it has kind of grown into, I still kind of use it for that same purpose. I don't keep it up with it as often as I'd like. But yeah, it's a really a fun way to kind of just play around with things I'm working on, ideas I have, things that I think are funny, and cocktail recipes and stuff. So yeah.
It's a nice glimpse into you as a person, but also sort of, again, as a cocktail novice, it's a great place to get ideas for drinks.
You know, I still use it to go back and get ideas. I'm like, wait, didn't I make a drink like this before? I think I wrote about it.
That's so neat. So my final question, and I didn't tell you this ahead of time. So in New Orleans, right, lots of people can describe their last meal.
Mm-hmm.
So last meal, last drink, what would it be?
Like my final meal?
Yep.
Oh, boy. My last meal, my last drink. My goodness. Well, oh geez. I'd probably have to have Chris McMillan make me a mint julep because it's a thing of beauty to see and it is a thing of beauty to drink and it is a behemoth. So it would keep me going for a while, to be sure. It's a very slow sipper. I would like to stretch this out as long as I can. Being that that's true as well, I did, for my 40th birthday, did the tasting menu at Commander's Palace.
Yes.
I had 11 courses, and it lasted 5 hours. And yeah, I'd like to stretch that out as long as possible. It was amazing, and definitely the most amazing dining experience I've had in my life. And it was helped that it was with, you know, my best friend on the planet as well.
That would be a pretty good way to end it, I would think. Well, Abigail, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure to get to know you and to share this with everyone.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure to be here. Thank you, sweetheart.
And congratulations again on Bartender of the Year.
Thank you.
All right, y'all. We'll talk to you soon. Thanks. A couple details about Tales of the Cocktail. As we discussed in the interview, Tales of the Cocktail will be held from July 19th through the 24th, 2016. This year is the year of the mule, the Moscow mule to be exact. There's a series of ticketed events as part of Tales, and most are held at the Hotel Monteleone, which, by the way, is the home of the Carousel Bar. If you enjoy a great cocktail, New Orleans culture, and Mardi Gras, this is your mecca. In any event, Tales is headquartered at the hotel, but throughout the week you'll find lots of events at bars and restaurants across the Crescent City. For tickets and info about Tales of the Cocktail, check out their website at www.talesofthecocktail.com. I'll also put a link in the notes for today's show at www.beyondbourbonst.com/15. Additionally, you can find a list of the places Abigail suggested on the show notes page at the website. After we went off air, Abigail and I discussed doing a separate show with a panel of experts where we could talk about the various drinks created in New Orleans and how they're best prepared. That sounds like something fun, and we'll revisit it later in the year. All right, I hope you enjoyed the discussion with Abigail. It's interesting to me to see New Orleans through the eyes of someone who moved here intentionally. I love Abigail's idea of bars by theme, that is, by type of cocktail or mood. Since the interview, I've been back to compare La Penne to meet an old friend. It's just such a great space and a great location on Chapultepec, just off Poydras. Keep it in mind when you're out and about, and especially if you're at a festival or a concert over in nearby Lafayette Square. Thanks so much for listening. And if you want to hear more shows like this one, please subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. And do me a favor, if you're enjoying the show, please find one other person who might also like it and share it with them. Could you do that for me? Thanks. New episodes are available every other Wednesday. Join us next time for an episode all about the history of the streetcar in New Orleans. We're also working on future shows about the New Orleans Saints, the HBO series Tremé, and Your Girl's Guide to a Weekend Trip to New Orleans, plus many more. Until next time, laissez le bon temps rouler.
Thanks for listening to the Beyond Bourbon Street podcast. Find us anytime at beyondbourbonst.com.